Welcome back to camp. We've moved now from Suffolk in England, across the English Channel, over an entire continent and a marginal sea in the Pacific Ocean, to spend a May evening in the Kansai region of Japan, just outside of Kyoto, where the wisterias are in bloom. By day, the purple sprays of flowers were gently ruffling in a warm breeze. Now they are melting into the purple of twilight. Wisteria flowers herald the approaching summer with its heat and riotous cicada chatter. But for now, the campfire is still comforting after dark, and still the loudest thing to be heard. We're camped tonight in an overgrown estate garden of what was once a fine house in the Shindenzukuri style. Funny, though, it's not on any maps. And it obviously hasn't seen any of the preservation efforts that saved so many of Kyoto's beautiful traditional houses. Maybe no one can see it. Maybe it's not really here at all. That wouldn't be unlikely, given the places you and I tend to meet up in, would it? We've seen whole cathedrals materialize out of mist, after all. I peeked inside the house. The tatami have rotted almost completely away, and the sliding doors have swollen so much from rot that they're stuck in place. I got a funny feeling while I was in there, like spiders crawling up and down my spine. I saw cobwebs everywhere, of course, but the strange thing was, they were huge. They coated the walls like curtains from floor to ceiling, and the strands looked as though they were as thick around as my little finger. Perhaps it's better that the place stays hidden, slowly going to dust. In any case, I wasn't welcome there. And I'm a foreigner here in Kyoto, which means I'm not prepared to defend myself against the supernatural in this country. Stories say you have to have grown up here, immersed in tradition, to really arm yourself properly. And I believe them. The wisteria grove seems to offer some protection, so I felt it best to keep a respectful distance. If we hear a heavy skittering from the upper rooms, it may be that the Tsuchigumo, or dirt spider, has taken up residence in one of the dark upper chambers. Tsuchigumo appear in many stories around Japan, and though they are shapeshifters, their natural form is that of a spider, which has lived to be 400 years old or more, when it attains the size of a tiger, who can often speak in a human voice. In the famous kabuki play Tsuchigumo, a powerful lord named Yorimitsu fell ill, and though he was young and strong, he seemed unable to recover. Medicine did no good, and he lay in his bed exhausted and in pain, with only his sword-bearer Yasumasa by his side. Night fell, and Yasumasa stayed close to his lord, keeping watch. Then, from the dark night outside, came a strange monk. He was 7 feet tall, and there was something odd about his shadow. He announced that he was there to pray for the Lord Yorimitsu's recovery, and was permitted to draw close so that he could begin. The monk came closer and closer, and Yasumasa did not like the way his shadow danced and jittered. Then the monk threw out a silken rope towards the ailing Lord Yorimitsu, who reacted quickly despite being so ill. He drew his famous sword, Hizakirimaru, the knee-cutting sword, and struck the false monk. Yasumasa leapt to his defense, but too late. The monk disappeared back into the darkness. Yorimitsu was horrified to discover that he was covered head to foot in thick cobwebs, revealing that the monk was actually the monstrous spider, the Tsuchigumo, in disguise, who had been casting evil upon the Lord to make and keep him sick, planning to feed richly from the Lord and rule in his stead. Yasumasa and the Lord's other retainers, the four heavenly kings, go out to hunt the spider, finding it in an abandoned tomb, wounded, but still as large and fierce as ever. It attacks, casting webs around the heroes, but its wound tires it, allowing Yasumasa at the last moment to cast it to the ground with a killing blow from the blade Hizakirimaru, which is then given a new name. Kumokirimaru, the spider-cutting sword. Tsuchigumo are yokai, which are supernatural shape-shifting entities unique to the folklore of Japan. If you're familiar with yokai, you'll know how diverse and fascinating they are. But if you're not, I recommend reading Yokai Attack, the Japanese Monster Survival Guide, by Hiroko Yoda and Matt Alt, with delightfully gruesome illustrations by Tatsuya Morino. It's a pretty comprehensive introduction to the subject for us newcomers. There is also the work of the famous manga artist Shigeru Mizuki, who wrote and illustrated Nononba, one of my favorite books of all time, manga or otherwise. Mizuki's work depicts not only the supernatural folklore of Japan, but the experience of growing up surrounded by this folklore, both frightened and fascinated by the stories his grandmother told. It's a perspective I think people from all over the world can relate to, and the best way to experience folklore is through the words and memories of those who live it. The Tsuchigumo isn't the only yokai with the natural form of a spider. There is also the Jorogumo, sometimes translated to English as the spider wife, but also as the whore spider. She appears primarily to strong young men as a beautiful young woman, luring them into quiet places away from help, with charms such as ethereal music and dance. When she has them alone, she reveals her spider form, wrapping them in silk and feasting on them for as long as she wishes before dispatching them. Her victims, it is said, die a slow and terrifying death. What is it about spiders that inspires fear in so many of us? Arachnophobia is a very common phobia. I certainly have it. But spiders themselves are very beneficial animals. They keep down insect populations, including those that cause disease in humans and other mammals. They're also remarkable creatures, spinning webs that catch not only their prey, but also the morning dewdrops in lacy nets that are so dazzling to humans. For me, it was their tendency to appear suddenly out of nowhere. I grew up in the Pacific Northwest, and every autumn, the wolf spiders would come in, looking for warmth and safety. I'd look up, and there, where nothing had been on a wall, was a spider as big as a saucer, all splayed out like an aggressive, spindly hand, or running so fast across the floor its legs were a weird, uneven blur. Of course, I learned later that wolf spiders are among the most harmless of arachnids. They very rarely bite, and when they do, most adults don't have a strong reaction to their venom. Female wolf spiders only exhibit aggression when carrying an egg sac, and are also one of the few arachnids who care for their young after they hatch. Baby wolf spiders will gather on the mother's abdomen for shelter, and she'll carry them for days before they disperse to find their own territories. It's not like spiders are horrifying antagonists in every piece of folklore, either. As I was growing up with the autumn wolf spider brigades, I was also growing up with access to English adaptations of the wonderful stories of Anansi, the spider, from West Africa. Anansi is still probably one of my favorite go-to characters for inspiration. When I want to remember why I tell stories, Anansi went through so much to bring them to the world because he knew that they were treasures that should be shared. Now he was impulsive and often selfish, but witty, curious, and a helper of human beings. He got into lots of trouble, and he caused plenty of it. But he wove webs to the sky and underwent many trials to convince the sky god Nyame to let him release the power of stories to the world. I love the thought that stories are living treasures, capable of release to walk or fly among the people, being told and retold as part of their life history. On my personal reading list right now is The Pot of Wisdom, Anansi Stories, by Ghanaian author Adwoa Badwe and illustrator Baba Wagu Diakit of Mali. It's aimed at school-age children, but I still love reading fiction for kids. I feel that reading folklore, especially from other cultures, makes us children again, wide-eyed at a whole new world of wonders no matter our age, and children's literature is a perfect vehicle for that experience. Then, from North America, there's Grandmother Spider. Another helper and protector of humanity, she's credited in different stories from Navajo, Zuni, and Hopi stories with many great deeds. She helped create a world that can support human life. She provided rules that protect social order. She invented string games and the art of weaving. So why all these scary spider stories alongside those of wonder, enchantment, and the uplifting of the human spirit through art and spoken story? Maybe we have some innate fear of the venom they use for hunting, even if it is relatively harmless in most actual spider species. Maybe we don't like to imagine the fly, bound and helpless, being drained of its life, even though the actual death of an insect to a spider is likely to be pretty quick. We draw it out in our minds that seize upon the horrific. Then there's the eggs. I know some people find the idea of clusters of little arachnid eggs inside tangled silk to be inherently disgusting. Most folks in the US have probably heard some version of this story. A girl goes to sleep, and a spider walks across her face. She wakes up to find an angry red spot on her cheek, which her mother tells her is a spider bite. It itches and hurts, and several days later it swells into a nasty boil and pops, releasing blood and tiny spider babies from the egg sac the spider laid in the girl's face. It's a bit odd, because spiders simply don't reproduce this way. Some types of flies and other parasites do, but not spiders. I think spiders got unfairly dumped into that story because some of the early tellers were already scared of or disgusted by them. Combining the fear of the monster spider and the awful allure of body horror was certainly the inspiration behind the creepypasta by Vincent Vena Cava called The African Boana Spider, which calls back to the genre of fantastical European and American travel literature. The version I will read is from 6 years ago, when the story was tested on a Reddit thread for very short, scary stories. Dr. Tweed, so nice to finally see you again. I trust you have many stories to tell me about your adventures deep in the heart of Africa. Dr. Tweed had a wide grin on his face. He wore a khaki blazer and a red bow tie. The old man squinted through his bifocals as he beckoned Robert to the table where two hot cups of tea had already been poured. Robert, my good man. Yes, yes, of course. Join me for some tea, and I shall regale you with a tale about the most curious creature I have ever seen. The two men took their seats. So, Doctor, tell me about this mysterious creature of yours. Ah, yes. It's called the African Boana spider, named after the indigenous people in the part of the jungle where the creature originally hails. It's a massive arachnid. I dare say the thing is about half a meter in diameter. But that's not even the most interesting thing about it. This creature has evolved the most peculiar survival tactic. Listen to this. It is known to enter an animal through the oral cavity. From there, it is actually capable of attaching itself to its host's nervous system, where it can gain full access to its movement and verbal patterns, essentially rendering the host a useless puppet. It stays in the animal's body long enough to plant its eggs and get to a new host, while it feeds off the beast's cerebral spinal fluid. Robert's eyes widened. What a fascinating creature, Doctor. Could you imagine what would happen if it made its way here to Europe? People would be in quite a panic. The doctor took a sip of his tea. Could I imagine, Robert? I dare say it already has. Dr. Tweed's head violently cocked back. Terrible gagging noises emanated from his throat as blood started pouring from all orifices, and 8 long, spindly legs emerged from his mouth. Vincent Vena Cava now has several published books, with many short stories included. One of them actually has an updated version of the one I just read. His titles include Just a Little Terrible and Decomposing Head, and he also still has stories available online for free. I really enjoy his style. I mentioned many reasons why spiders might scare so many of us, but there is another working hypothesis. Some researchers suspect that arachnophobia is really only most common in cultures dominated by European influence. Some cultures include spiders in their cuisine, others venerate them or simply don't mind them. Our cultural heritage and the dominant culture where we grew up, therefore, may be an important factor determining things as powerful and seemingly unchangeable as phobias. In any case, there are treatments for arachnophobia, and... wait. Did you see that? Look. Up at the house, past the wisteria trees. A silhouette. It looks like a woman in a white kimono. Is she looking at us? It's hard to tell. Can you see the spindly shadows dancing behind her? Are those legs? I think it's time to move on. Perhaps the lady of the house would like to take a turn in her garden. It's only polite to give her privacy. That, and she might be hungry. Before I go, I want to thank the folks who have communicated with Ancient Voices and A Walk in the Dark about creatures and stories they would like to see featured here. I know many of you listening probably have more information and experiences with characters like Anansi and Grandmother Spider, with yokai, and with creepypasta. If you have recommendations on books or other media related to something you hear on A Walk in the Dark, or something you want to share from your own experiences, I would love to hear from you. You can email the Ancient Voices podcast at amberhyland9@gmail.com. Amber and I are always looking to connect with you. Let me know if you'd be all right with me reading your comments or suggestions on the podcast. I want to give credit where it's due. I've received a couple of recommendations already, and my next episode is actually based off of creatures I never even heard about until someone emailed. This has been a production of A Walk in the Dark for the Ancient Voices podcast, with music by Coag at co.ag on YouTube. I'm your storyteller, Amanda Newsom.